becoming as sure as possible that this is the husband or wife God has in mind for you. You'll do that only if you keep your head and look at the things he or she does with a critical eye, without being critical of them, of course. Remember, what's normal for you is not necessarily normal to your partner. What you regard as a virtue, he or she may see as a flaw. You're going to discover things about this person over time that, no matter how well you thought you knew them, will throw you. Now's the time to learn how you'll react to those surprises so that when they come later, you can respond not with judgment, but compassion, clarity, and love. There are a lot of ways to do this. Though it might seem clinical and unromantic, we highly recommend the kind of 4-month assessment and counseling process we went through. Having all those facts on the table and a professional counselor to help us sort through them really put us on a firm footing. We discovered that while drama and volatility might seem romantic, compatibility and deep knowledge of each other are what great relationships are really made of. You might also consider spiritual counseling, talking with your minister or lay spiritual counselor about your beliefs, relationship with God, and other issues can be very revealing without being as rigorous or potentially off-putting as a long questionnaire. Regular Q&A sessions. We don't want to turn your dating life into Shark Tank, but it wouldn't hurt to schedule one night every week or two where you two sit down and talk about a specific topic that's relevant to your future. Goals, children, lifestyle, parents, mutual interests, and so on. Set whatever ground rules suit you, and then stick to them. Travel. Traveling together is the classic test of a relationship's health. You're under stress, sharing common space, often with different expectations. Find your own way, but find a way. Remember, just because you want to commit to this person doesn't mean they're the person God intends for you to be with. Take your time to figure that out. Should you live like you're married when you're not? Once people think they're with the person God wants them to marry, they often take the next step, move in together. However, while plenty of men and women have lived together and had successful marriages, including a few couples in our own families, it's not our recommendation. We know this isn't a popular stance to take in today's relationship culture. However, we can only speak from our experience and what has worked for us. Living together wasn't even on the table for us. We didn't move in together until after our wedding. We saw that God was setting us up for something incredible, and we wanted to take the time to really get to know each other without the pressure of pretending we were already husband and wife. It's essential not to avoid acting like you're married before you actually are. Doing that establishes expectations that can become impossible to live up to. We have a good friend who's been with his girlfriend for 5 or 6 years, living together for much of that time. They're trying to do the wait, but it's tough when you're sharing the same space. Celibacy is extremely difficult, and you start play-acting the part of the married couple. Cooking meals, sharing the shopping, hosting holiday parties, and all the rest. The thing is, you're not married. So cohabitation is another form of limbo, where one or both of you can easily start presuming that you should be treated like a spouse, even though you're not. Marriage is a formal, powerful commitment. I choose you and no one else. Until you and your partner have made that commitment, you could still be eyeing the exits when tempers flare, schedules conflict, or a big argument erupts. There's a time to act like husband and wife, but it doesn't come until you're actually married, until you have that indelible commitment to each other. Acting married when you're not can set you up for heartbreak. If someone's not committing to you permanently, it's usually for a reason. They aren't sure. They aren't ready. There's nothing wrong with that. However, they should take the time to get sure and ready. But that may not be as likely to happen if you're living together.
Megan. My last boyfriend before Devon lived in Florida, so while I didn't live with him, I was there about 70% of the time. That proved damaging because his space wasn't my space, and I always felt like it wasn't my space. As much as I felt like the woman of the house, it wasn't mine. I was just there. My life wasn't there. When something would go wrong, I would expect special treatment because I was the lady of the house, but I wouldn't get it. I felt completely betrayed, so I rebelled. Not cooking for anybody, not cleaning, not doing anything. When I felt shortchanged or I expected something that he wasn't going to provide, we would argue violently. And the way we argued was completely out of my comfort zone. That's not who I was or wanted to be. Living together under those circumstances made me act like someone other than who I am because I was playing a role. It's the same for anyone. You're not yourself when you're living with implications and expectations that just aren't supported by reality.
Devon. That experience damaged Megan in ways that we're still dealing with. She put herself in a situation where the man was not ready to commit at the level that she was already committed. Even today, if she feels slighted in that way, or if anything in our marriage evokes the same negative experience, she'll react defensively, angrily. Those echoes haven't faded yet. It was different for me. My younger and older brothers were married before me. My cousin and best friend were married before me. I didn't want to rush into a lifelong commitment just because everybody else was doing it. I was not yet ready. Before Megan, I was in a significant relationship with a young lady who had been a friend. She was everything on the list. We'd been together for a year, and everyone assumed we would get married. But I just wasn't ready, and I had to break it off. It was very painful, but the pain would have been much greater if I'd lied to myself. Lots of couples live together thinking it's the logical next step before marriage. But that decision may actually move you farther away from getting married. You're already acting like you're married, so why bother with the formality? The Friends and Family Plan. We'd be remiss if we didn't take a moment to talk about the impact that friends and family can have on a couple's commitment. When you get serious about someone, you're excited to tell your friends and family members all about it. They're just as excited, firing endless questions and speculating about whether you'll get married, have kids, the whole thing. We've both had relationships where our significant others became as intertwined with our families as they did with us. But not knowing how to manage friends and family can make it harder to handle commitment with objectivity and restraint. In relationships, friends and family members tend to fall into two camps, defenders and advocates. Defenders are skeptical, even cynical about the person you're dating. Is he good enough for you? Has he unfriended his ex-girlfriends? Why not? They're looking out for your interests, and while they can prompt you to ask some good questions, they can easily cross over into the negative, finding fault where there isn't any. Advocates are absolutely uncritical about the person you're with, even when they should be. As soon as you tell them all about the person you're with, they want to know where the ring will come from and when you'll pop the question. They're so pumped that you're in a relationship that they could push you to move faster than you're comfortable going. Obviously, this is potentially a problem. Being in the wait is about being patient and letting things develop in their own time. When you let well-meaning family members or close friends push you out of your comfort zone, you sabotage yourself. However, if you manage friends and family right, they can be assets to your journey as a couple, even before you get together. Devon. I'm blessed with some amazing, strong women in my life. My mother and my aunts. They and many of my other family members have weighed in on my dating life, and even forewarned me that I would defy my own intentions and marry someone in the entertainment business. That was clearly a sign from God, and I paid attention, which I think kept me more open-minded about Megan than I might have been if I'd only been thinking about my list. When she met my mother and aunts, they immediately took to her and saw something really special in her. I'm sure that was one more push that helped bring us together.
Megan. During those 9 months prior to dating Devon, when I told many of my friends that God had told me Devon was my husband, more than a few of them looked at me like I was a little crazy. That was a good test of my faith. The ones who took me seriously were valuable sources of information about his celibacy and his role as a minister. I learned a lot about this man while I was still in a place of waiting that I never would have learned without those friends.
Managing the help of family and friends is simple. Just wait. If you don't want them intruding into your dating life, then wait to tell them about the one you like until you're sure that you're ready to pursue a deeper relationship. Passion chemistry. Even if you're practicing the wait and remaining celibate, you need to assess if you and the person you're dating have passion chemistry. This is very important. Just because you practice the wait doesn't guarantee you're going to have a great sex life when you get married. A great sex life has a lot to do with the chemistry you have with the person you're getting serious with. Is there a passion between you? Desire that goes beyond the strictly physical? How intense does it get when you kiss? It's important to monitor this, obviously within the confines of still practicing the wait, because it matters. Marriage doesn't automatically light a stove where the pilot light was out. So don't be afraid to kiss each other or hold each other, because if there isn't passion chemistry, this is a red flag that you'll need to address through counseling, books, or pastoral help if you want to have a strong and healthy marriage. Popping the question. You've asked the good questions and received good answers. You've revealed your scars and darker side and seen your partners, and it's cool. You've come to know each other's character and heart. You're ready. Ready to make the ultimate commitment of marriage. Good. God brought you together to forsake all others and to help each other become the people He created you to be. And marriage is the surest way to make that happen. So when you're sure, get engaged. But be engaged only as long as it takes to plan your wedding. We're not believers in long engagements. Some people use the engagement as another phase of testing compatibility. But that's another way of saying, I'm not sure. If you're not sure, don't get engaged. Men in particular are more likely to ask, will you marry me, as a holding action, because they don't want to lose the woman they're with. Then they insist on a 2-year engagement to buy more time to figure out what they want. Get engaged because you really are serious about getting married, not because you need another excuse not to get married. You owe each other better than that. When a couple is really ready and the proposal is confident and sincere, it can be magic. That's what happened to us. Devon. Megan had thought I was going to propose around New Year's. Her family was even asking, so did anything interesting happen on New Year's Eve? I knew that I was ready to marry her because I had enough time to consider what was out there and to evaluate what her life would add to mine. But I wasn't ready to propose just then. Then, in February of 2012, I ordered the ring. In March, Megan came by my office on the same day I'd had the ring delivered there. But I wasn't going to do it there. That weekend, she was leaving to go to New York to shoot the pilot for the TV series, Deception. Still unsure of what to do, I called my younger brother and said, I think I'm supposed to propose today. But I don't know. I'm looking for a sign. He started praying on it. When I got to her house, she had thrown on a shirt that one of my mother's friends had gotten my brothers and me. It read, "Got Franklin?" I stopped her on the balcony, took a picture of her in the shirt, and sent it to my brother. He said, "That's crazy." Then we went to eat at this Jamaican restaurant. At the end of Jumping the Broom, the film where we first got to know each other, is a song called Cupid Shuffle. Guess what song came on the sound system at the restaurant? I Had My Sign. We went back home and started watching TV, and then she had to get ready to go to the airport. Suddenly, I was incredibly nervous. I knew I had to do this now.
Megan.
I was lying on his chest, and all of a sudden I heard boom, boom. His heart was pounding. I said, "Are you okay?" He said he was nervous because I was leaving town, and he was making his way over to the closet while giving me this fishy line about me being out of town for a long time. And then he brings this wooden box out of his jacket pocket. I was trying to figure out what it was, and when I finally figured it out, I was like, "Oh my God! Oh my God!" I heard some of what he said about him and me, but mostly I was freaking out. Then he came over and got on one knee. Of course I said yes. Then I was jumping on the bed like a little kid, but there was no time to celebrate because we had to jam to LAX. We called my sister from the car, and she alternated between speaking and screaming from excitement.
Planning our wedding was easy. We decided to get married in June, and none of it felt a moment too soon. We didn't disagree on anything. Do you like this? Yes. Do you want that? Yes. No drama, no stress. We were two people who were finally exactly where we needed to be, and with whom we needed to be with. Marriage and beyond. Of course, getting married is easy. Being married is hard. There's a lot to sort out. Gender roles, living together, and combining households, for starters. But if you reach your wedding in the right way, while waiting and continuing to learn about each other, you should be strong and solid at this point. That's not to say there aren't challenges. We still face them. Each of us does things the other doesn't like, from leaving clothes on the floor, Devon, to leaving stacks of miscellaneous papers next to the bed, Megan. We've had to figure out who's responsible for taking out the trash and making meals. We have to flex and chill when one of us is coming off a long location shoot or a long day of development meetings followed by a premiere. But those things are minor compared to all we've been through to find and really understand each other. Marriage may be the finish line for celibacy, but the need for sexual discipline doesn't end after you exchange rings. It's dangerous to use sex to wallpaper over conflicts and differences that call for honest communication. The simple solution for that: never have important discussions in bed. It's much too easy to become pleasantly distracted. One of the questions we field often is, "When are you having children?" There's little doubt that we'd like to have children one day, but not now. The biggest thing for us is living for our marriage, giving ourselves all the tools we need to be the best we can be. Right now, we're about learning all we can, growing together, and having a solid platform for working God's will. Having children changes everything. If you both want them right away, then have them. If not, then don't bow to pressure from anyone. Give yourselves time to be married. The time before children is a special window for just the two of you. Children are another reason to wait. To ask questions, communicate, and watch for signs from God. The worst thing you can do is make babies because someone's mom wants grandchildren. You've seen the marriages. A couple has kids before they are ready, and they never get to live their lives. Then, the moment the kids leave for college, the marriage is over. Apart from the children, they had nothing keeping them together. Not only didn't they know each other, they didn't even like each other. That's a waste. You're a parent for a lifetime. You'll never get that pre-parenting time back. You can stay up late, travel, go to the movies, and live with total freedom. Raising children is a joy, but so is knowing that you're really, really ready before you make that leap. The blessings of marriage. You really can have the life you and your spouse want if you wait on things to happen when you and God are ready. Life is better when you have patience and let the Lord work, because you allow Him to bring you the right person at the time He knows is right. Neither of us was expecting to date each other and marry so quickly, and there have been challenges, but we trusted God, and it's been incredible. We've grown. Doors have opened, allowing us to travel the world and talk about marriage and sex and relationships. Our careers have gone in new directions because of our marriage. We've been able to help people. In part, we probably came through so well because we were older, in our 30s, with a lot of life experience behind us. It's important to come into a marriage already knowing who you are, and not counting on your marriage to change or complete you. Marriage will change you, but not in the ways you expect. You should be complete before committing to someone who's going to complement you. We can both look back with confidence that we lived single lives without regret before we got married. We know we're never going to reflect and say with regret, "I wish I had done that before I got married." We did that. We built incredible careers. We've seen the world. We've done amazing things on our own. And now we'll do them together. Waiting to commit to a relationship until you have life experience is a smart move. It helps you understand who you want to be. It helps you understand the purpose that God has in mind for you. Some other advice we'd like to leave you with. Don't base your marriage on preconceived ideals. Let your marriage find its rhythm. Every marriage is a unique organism. It's important to give that organism time to live, evolve, and settle into what it's going to be. Don't expect your partner to change because you're married. You can't change someone else in marriage, but marriage will change you. Have a clear sense of your own identity before you marry. If you don't know who you are before you get married, marriage will not teach you. Instead, you'll become a person's wife and then someone's mom. You'll lose yourself. Understand who you are as a union, but also understand who you are independent of the union. Whatever road you take, we wish you a marriage that's as joyous and blessed as ours has been. Chapter 9. Don't give up. We must be willing to get rid of the life we've planned so as to have the life that is waiting for us. Joseph Campbell. There's a woman we know who, until she was in her mid-30s, spun her wheels in painful relationship after painful relationship. She was a classic savior, a woman who always tried to fix men who were troubled or bad boys. But when she got into a serious relationship, she spent so much energy taking care of the man's needs that she never stood up for what she wanted. Inevitably, her boyfriends would lose respect for her and end up breaking up with her. For years, she repeated this pattern again and again, and wondered why things never changed. Then finally, after yet another brutal breakup, she stopped to pray and heard a voice asking, "If you stand up for what you want, what's the worst that could happen?" It was a revelation. She finally saw her pattern of behavior clearly and realized that the one common factor in all her failed relationships was her. From that point on, she vowed to change things. She went into a time of waiting. She became celibate. She cleaned up her social relationships. She pursued several long-standing goals and spent some therapeutic time alone, journaling and praying. And she discovered that she had the courage to put her own needs first in a relationship, that she was worthy. A few months later, she met an incredible man who, as it turned out, lived on the same street. But she hadn't been able to see him until she was ready in mind and spirit. Eventually, they became husband and wife. If you have been celibate for a time and still have not met your spouse, you may find yourself saying, "I've been waiting, but nothing's happening. I'm getting tired and discouraged. What do I do now?" The frustration is understandable. People are giving up sex, which is tough enough. On top of that, you might be taking a break from dating, spending more time alone, and confronting your darkest relationship demons. Despite all this, you still haven't met the person God means for you to be with. Maybe you've been practicing the wait, or at least you think you've been practicing it, but you're not getting what you want yet. We thought we'd close this book by addressing this distressing situation. The wait always works. First, let's get one thing out of the way right now. The wait always produces results. We've made it clear that the wait is about more than giving up sex. It's more than sitting around not doing anything. Still, there are a lot of people who are simply waiting around for good things to happen and wasting their precious time. By our best estimate, based on the stories we hear from friends and colleagues, many of those frustrated individuals are women. We have heard from and spoken with many women who are frustrated that they have spent years abstaining from sex in order to let that one godly man come into their lives. Still nothing. They are angry, confused, and near panic. If you're in this position, you may be wondering if the wait is real. If you've done something wrong, or if you should just marry the first eligible person you can find before you spend the rest of your life alone. We have some suggestions that we hope will provide clarity and give you some peace. Beware of pitfalls. How you wait is as important as why. We want you to enjoy the kind of life bliss that we have been so blessed to find. So let's get to work. If you have been patiently hoping for better days in your romantic life, but aren't seeing them yet, here are some possible reasons why your wait could be setting you back rather than helping you. You're waiting for a certain person. Is there a certain man or woman you've always had your eye on? Do you believe that if you practice the wait, God will align your paths and bring you together? Unfortunately, it doesn't necessarily work that way. It's possible that the object of your affection is the one you're intended to be with, but it's even more probable that he or she might not be. Our story is a perfect example of that. We weren't even on each other's dating radar for years before the Lord started bringing us together. Don't be so fixated on a certain person that you pray for them instead of praying for God's will. Because if you can only see God answering your prayer, if he brings you the person you have your eye on, you might pass right by his ideal match for you. You're waiting for God to do all the work. The wait is a two-way street. God does some of the work, but you have to do your share. You can't just stop having sex, then sit at home nursing the same grudges and compulsions and wounds and say, "Okay, Lord, I'm ready for you to bring me my spouse." We've said that when and how God brings you your partner is as important as who he brings. And this is what we mean. Imagine if that person came into your life when nothing had changed. Would you recognize him or her? Would your old bad habits sabotage the relationship before it even got started? The wait operates on a straightforward premise. You put in the work to become your best self, and God will put you into your best life. You don't really know why you're waiting. Certainly, there comes a time in everyone's dating life where they're tempted to throw up their hands, swear off the opposite sex forever, and retreat into the house with Apple TV and the number of a local pizza delivery place. That's understandable. But most of us get our groove back after a weekend of moping and head back out to try again. If you haven't, and you're just on indefinite hold from relationships in the hopes that something good will happen, you're probably going to wind up even more frustrated. Plenty to do in the meantime. The wait is just as much about self-improvement through delayed gratification as it is about love. The clearer you are about how you want to better yourself while you're waiting, the more successful you will be. As we've mentioned before, these are some of the important areas we suggest you focus on if you're planning your own time of waiting. Health and fitness. Personal finance. Paying off debts, buying a house, investing for retirement. Career. Education. Travel. Entrepreneurship. Starting a business, working for a startup. Spirituality. Going to church more regularly. Honing your openness to the Word. Becoming adept at prayer. Learning to read God's signs and portents. Creativity. Painting, acting, composing music, writing a novel, doing stand-up comedy, helping others, doing charitable work, etc. Trust what you can't see. The wait, like any other practice, takes, well, practice. It's a skill and a discipline, and your experience might not be smooth and even throughout your time of waiting. You might start off feeling isolated and sexually frustrated, only to feel the wind at your back as soon as you start a class or talk to your minister. You may go along for months feeling like you're exactly where you need to be, only to run into an old flame at the grocery store and spend the weekend in a depressed funk. Like any discipline, the wait has its ups and downs, its periods of achievement, and it plateaus when it seems like nothing is happening. But here's the thing. Even when it seems like nothing is happening, if you're executing the wait faithfully and doing the work, good things are happening. You just might not be able to see them yet. Much of God's work happens behind the scenes where it's not obvious to our perceptions. Faith keeps us going through those quiet times, trusting that if we persist and stay true to our intention, He will reward us. It's a little like sending the manuscript of your novel to a publisher. You do your best work, cast it into the universe, and cross your fingers. Then you wait. The book might sit on an editor's desk for months before he reads it. But when he does, he loves it and sends you a letter telling you that he wants to publish it. Yes, they still send letters. Publishing is an old-fashioned business. All this time, while your manuscript is waiting to be read, and while the congratulatory letter is making its way to your door, you're unaware that something terrific is on its way. Your only recourse is faith. Then one day, the letter arrives, and your faith is rewarded. Stay on God's timetable. There's just one problem. As far as you know, you've been practicing the wait just as we've suggested. You're doing it for the right reasons, doing the work on your mind and character and staying disciplined about sex. But nothing has happened, and you're starting to lose hope that it ever will. What are you doing wrong? First of all, you might not be doing anything wrong. You may just not have practiced the wait for enough time. The biggest leap of faith involved in the wait lies in not knowing how long it's going to take for your husband or wife to become a parent to you. It could be 6 months. It could be 6 years. It will happen when you are mentally, emotionally, and spiritually ready. But there's no way to know when that will be. There's also no reliable way to speed things up. Seek counseling. Go back to church. clean up your diet. Those are all beneficial things, but none of them will move up your timetable if God doesn't will it. You don't know when that time is going to come. There could be a crisis on your horizon that will propel you into a new way of thinking. Maybe someone new, who's not your husband or wife, will come into your life to be the bridge to the person who is. In this case, it's difficult for us to say, just keep waiting. But that's what we have to do. You must have faith that God will make your wait worthwhile. What if that meeting with your future spouse is right around the corner, but you sabotage it after years of discipline by giving up and going back to your old ways? That would be tragic. Besides, waiting can benefit you in many ways more than bringing you and your meant-to-be partner together. For example, during your wait, have you experienced less drama and more stable friendships? Dated some really interesting people? Gotten to know yourself at a deeper level? Let go of past emotional baggage? Broken self-destructive behavior patterns? Gotten physically fit and mentally healthier? Advanced your career? Pursued your dreams? Become more deeply spiritual and drawn closer to God? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, you've profited from the wait. This practice may be a matter of finding the person with whom God wants you to do great things, but its core is about personal evolution. It's about being at peace with who you were, who you are, and who you're becoming. If you spend 5 years waiting and achieve that, can you honestly call the time wasted, even if it takes longer to meet your spouse? We don't believe so. The weight and self-esteem. Self-esteem is the 800-pound gorilla in the room, the reason so many of us go astray before discovering the weight. God may love us, we know, but we don't always love ourselves very much. So many of the problems that we bring upon ourselves, from addiction to remaining in damaging and even abusive relationships, stem from the deep-down belief that we can't do better, don't deserve better. The weight comes into play here, because rather than confront the reasons why we harbor such feelings of worthlessness and self-hatred, we often run from them by pursuing instant gratification, serial dating, casual sex, drinking, getting wrapped up in other people's dramas. They're often ways to avoid dealing with our own pain. But pain doesn't just heal without attention. It waits beneath the surface and poisons everything in our lives. The solution is to reject the quick fix of a drink or a one-nighter that temporarily dulls the pain. Face the reasons why you're in pain. It's hard, and it's something you shouldn't do alone, but it's definitely something you should do. There is life on the other side of trauma, self-loathing and bitterness, and it can be amazing. The first step is being willing to stare down your pain and not look away. Do that, and you can do the rest. Reflect and review. Another reason that you might not have found your spouse is that, to be perfectly honest, you already did. But you didn't recognize the person as your spouse when he or she was in front of you, and the opportunity passed you by. Don't panic. If that is what happened, it isn't the end of the world. There are several possibilities at work. You may not have been at a place in your development where you could see that person as special. Maybe he or she didn't conform to your list and you said, pass. If that happened, don't lose hope. If you recall, the two of us orbited each other for 4 years before we finally started dating. If God means for you to be with someone, he will bring you together, though the obstacles seem insurmountable. Another possibility, one we spoke about early on, is that you became a different person through your practice of the wait, and God decided that the person he originally had in mind for you was not your ideal partner after all. Free will gives us each the power to choose our own emotional, intellectual, and spiritual path. If that path curves unexpectedly, the person we thought was right for us may become just another date. In that case, your continued wait may just be a matter of God aligning your path with the new man or woman who will help you become the best version of yourself. If that's not the reason behind your frustration, then it's possible that despite starting the wait with the best of intentions, you've fallen into a rut. You're not pushing yourself to grow and learn like you used to, and this has slowed your progress to a crawl. This is more common with long wait periods, because boredom and complacency naturally set in. If you're not seeing electric results from your dating, and you've reached your immediate personal goals, it's easy to get too comfortable. Before you know it, clunk, you've fallen into a rut that's not much more effective than your previous pattern of behavior. Some people think the best defense against this sort of thing is discipline, but that will take you only so far. A long wait is a little like training for a triathlon. You're putting in a lot of work over a very long period of time for a reward that may come sometime in the future, but the work itself can become an obsession that blocks blessings. Discipline is good, but we think it's better to have people in your life who will hold you accountable. We do that for each other. Friends, family members, your ministers, mentors, any of them can be your accountability check-ins. Tell them about the wait, what you're doing and why, and what your goal is. Ask them to say something if they see you getting too comfortable or not moving forward in your life. A final reason that the wait may not be yielding results for you is that you're still carrying the same baggage that led to your previously dysfunctional romantic life. Practicing the wait involves letting go of the old fears, insecurities, and addictive behaviors that messed you up in the past and cleaning up your emotional self. That battered old baggage, feelings of being unloved by your parents, fears lingering in the wake of an abusive relationship, body issues, and so on, drives your behavior. That's why unhealthy relationship tends to follow unhealthy relationship over and over until the similarities become almost eerie. Until you can drop that baggage, those patterns aren't likely to change. Fine-tuning. When the two of us speak about our relationship and the wait in front of live audiences or on radio or television, we hear plenty of questions from people of strong faith who are already getting their minds right and syncing up their choices with God's will. They're looking for ideas on how they can be more disciplined, patient, and proactive. If you've already been practicing the wait without knowing it, and it's going pretty well, here are some fine-tuning tips that could make it even better. Check in regularly with your accountability partners. If you can put together a support circle of men or women who are all practicing the wait, that's gold. Everyone gets the challenges of celibacy and knows what everybody else is going through. But if you can't find others doing the wait, don't worry. All you really need is a small group of people you're close to who care about your well-being. Meet with them regularly and conduct your meetings based on the following ground rules: total honesty, constructive criticism, and no judgment. Your accountability partners will pat you on the back when you make great choices and won't let you off the hook when you make choices that undermine the weight. They'll help you get back on the horse if you weaken and sleep with an ex. They'll cheer you on when you sign up for the master classes you've been talking about taking for 2 years. They'll keep you honest and on track, even when the weight seems to be dragging on. Set clear goals and time frames. True, you don't have control over when God will bring you and your intended spouse together. However, that doesn't mean you don't get some control over timing. Set specific goals for yourself, such as a certain salary or a target weight you want to reach. Lay down equally specific schedules. I will make executive vice president by the end of 2017. You might not know when your ideal mate is coming, but that doesn't mean you can't exercise some control over the rest of the process. Celebrate. The wait shouldn't be a grim trudge through daily obligations. It should be a joyful daily discovery of what you're really capable of. So when you reach a milestone, reward yourself and celebrate your progress. There's absolutely nothing wrong with going out on the town with friends to celebrate a promotion, or treating yourself to a trip to a Caribbean beach as a reward for getting your financial affairs in order. Just be sure that your celebration doesn't undermine the work you're doing. No backsliding into bed with anyone, no matter how attractive. Set up your celebrations well in advance, so you have some incentive. Pray. As we've mentioned, this one should be elementary. God is at the core of the wait. You're doing all of this to give him room to work in your life. So check in with him even more often than you do with your accountability partners. We suggest a daily prayer specifically about the wait, asking for strength and discipline, and listening to the Lord speak to your spirit. He will reveal wonders to you if you're quiet and learn to recognize his voice. Keep a journal so you can see how far you've come. One big reason some people fall into complacency and stall is because they lose any sense of what they've accomplished. Journaling is the best way to keep track of where you were and where you are now. It doesn't matter whether you use a Tumblr blog, a video diary, or an old-fashioned, leather-bound book and a pen. Journal from the first day of the wait to the last, capturing as much detail as you can. When you feel tired or discouraged that you're running in place, go back and read your journal entries. You'll see how far you have come in a surprisingly short time. If your journal is online and public, you might even get encouraging comments from well-wishers cheering you on. That always helps raise the spirits and stiffen the will. Heal the past. Everyone who waits comes to the dance toting something from their past. Rivalries, trauma, anger, you name it. But it's precisely those ugly pieces of luggage that led you to the promiscuity or the multiple failed relationships. If you want to wait, you've got to let the past go and move on. That often means reaching out to people who have hurt you and making peace with them. We know that's difficult, but here's the most effective way to do that. Forgive. For someone practicing the wait, forgiveness is power. By forgiving others for their treatment of you, you free yourself from anger, regret, or guilt. You take back your power by taking the high ground, God's ground. Have you ever looked at someone from your past and thought, they don't deserve forgiveness? Maybe they don't, but remember that it's not about the other person. It's about you. Confronting and forgiving turns the page, closes the book, and lets you heal. Final thoughts. Neither of us was perfect in the way that we waited. We both made mistakes. We both questioned what God was doing and resisted his will. We became discouraged and confused. We're far from perfect. The one thing we did that allowed us to date, fall in love, marry, and come to you with this gift was to put our total faith in God. He threw us some surprises and challenges, but we never wavered in our belief that he was building a foundation under us that would lead us to glory. The experience of our romance has taught us so much, but this is one of the most surprising things we've learned. God is romantic. Admittedly, that's probably not the first word that comes to mind when you think of the Lord, Demanding, sure. Benevolent, absolutely. But romantic? Think about it. What's more romantic than knowing that there is a perfect person, truly more than one, for you out there in the world, and that he or she is slowly walking his or her winding path toward the place and time when you will meet? You don't know when you'll cross paths or how. You don't know if you'll instantly be attracted or just be friends for a while. All you know is that there is a love of your life who will one day be yours when you're ready. At the risk of repeating the film metaphor from Produced by Faith, God's directing a really great script. Wherever you are in your journey to find the love of your life, our best advice is to trust God and have faith. You can trust God to do right by you if you do right by Him. Entering the wait honestly, with good intentions, and doing your best to honor your commitment. Just don't give up. And if you fall, don't dwell on it. Dust yourself off. Ask for forgiveness and get right back to your commitment. Sometimes, God doesn't bring people into our lives in the way we expect or in the time we expect. But that doesn't mean He's not working in your life to make wonderful things happen. It just means that you have to have faith. Great things are coming. Better yet, great things are already here. Even if love isn't on your doorstep at this very moment, with every day that passes, you're becoming wiser, stronger, and more in control of who you're becoming. That's amazing. Believe in God just as He believes in you. Keep your focus. Take a deep breath, and don't give up on the wait. Let God work on you and within you. Right now, today, is the beginning of the relationship and the life that you've always dreamed of and the one you've been praying for. This concludes The Wait by Devon Franklin and Megan Good with Tim Vandehay. Narrated by J.D. Jackson and Allison Johnson. Copyright 2016 by Devon Franklin and Megan Good. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Howard Books, a division of Simon & Schuster Incorporated, and was produced in the year 2016 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright there too. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of special offers.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.